Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Fantasy Team Advice Football Podcast.
It is Saturday, February 21st, and this is the Fantasy Team Advice Baseball Podcast, despite what the theme song might have said there. I am Joe DiRienzo, joined today by the creator and lead editor of FantasyTeamAdvice.com himself, KJ. How are you doing today? Can you hear me?
Hey, Joe. Yeah, I got you, man. I'm really excited. Pitchers and catchers are reporting. It's warming up out there. Ready for some baseball.
Yeah, warm out there. Not exactly anywhere else. I don't know about you, KJ, but it's 28 degrees where I am today. I'm kind of jealous of all the guys that get to be out there at spring training.
Yeah, you know, it's been 60 here in Colorado for the past week, but they are expecting about a foot of snow this weekend. So I guess still have a little bit more to get through here.
Unbelievable. Going to have to live vicariously through all the baseball guys that are down in Florida and Arizona. Spring training games start on March 1st, but for now we're sort of in that preseason holding pattern where we are doing a lot of projections. So later on in the show, KJ and I are going to break down the results from our writer's draft that wrapped up earlier this week. But we're going to start here with some news and notes, and starting off with some bad news about Texas Rangers middle infielder Jerickson Profar. He is out for the season yet again after requiring surgery on his shoulder. He obviously missed all of last year, so it's 2 years in a row. While he's still very, very early on in his career, he's missing another large amount of time. The value of the other Texas Rangers middle infielders, specifically Rougned Odor and Elvis Andrus. So starting with Odor, KJ, how does this change your perception of him? Now, this is the older brother, not the younger one that they just signed.
Well, Odor was a guy who I was looking at earlier in the preseason, and basically with Profar projected to return at some point, I wasn't really too high on even taking a chance in the late rounds on Odor. Now, obviously, he's going to get a full season of at-bats. You know, he's only 21 years old, so there's still a lot of room for improvement. But for me, he's more of a guy to stash in keeper leagues than actually be a hugely productive player in 2015. Last year, he appeared in 114 games. He had 386 at-bats. I think this year we could see him around 500 to 540 at-bats. He managed to get 9 home runs and just 4 stolen bases last year. I think the stolen bases really confused me because he got caught 7 times. I was under the impression he was supposed to be pretty quick, and I didn't get to see him play all that often. So I'm not sure if he's just a poor base runner or if it's just a small sample size. He obviously needs to improve that success rate. You can't be running and getting caught 7 out of every 11 times. That's just terrible. That's like David Ortiz. right now, we actually have Odor inside of our top 300. He was outside the top 300 until the Profar news came out. So we have him sitting at about number 280 right now, which means in deeper leagues, maybe like an ESPN-type league with a middle infielder spot. He's a guy you could take a chance on in the late rounds. He can get you a couple home runs and stolen bases, but I don't think he's going to necessarily blow anybody away this year.
Yeah, he's around mediocre to slightly above average across the board. He's a 10-10, maybe ceiling of a 10-15 kind of guy. And like you said, the steals, we expect a little bit more out of him last year. Obviously, he is young, so could be transitioning to just getting used to catchers actually being able to throw him out. Because in the minor leagues, speed might be all that you need to get those stolen base numbers up higher. Projection-wise, looking across the board at Steamer and things like that, they are looking at him as a double-digit homer and steal guy. So that has a little bit of value, especially as a middle infielder in those leagues that you need a second base, shortstop, and that middle infield spot. But like you said, he's still so young. This is more of a keeper stash kind of pick than expecting dramatic. What about Andrus, though? Because he's a guy that every year, he's a name that gets thrown around in the top grouping or the middle grouping of shortstops, but he's done about the same thing every year besides that 40 steal year early on in his career. What do you think his value changes going forward this year?
You know, I don't think he actually changes at all. I've always had him as a pretty overrated player, actually, in fantasy. He's basically a two-category contributor, so I could see him being more valuable in points leagues. But if you're in a 5x5, he's really only going to help you in stolen bases. He'll end up right around 30, and runs scored, I'm sure he'll be in the 85 to 90 range this year as long as Prince Fielder stays healthy. But overall, I'm not willing to pay up just because of scarcity at the position for a guy who's only going to help me in two categories. I mean, he would need steroids or a huge power surge just to hit 5 home runs this year. Or maybe he'd get 4 inside the park. I don't know. It would take a fluke for that to happen. He has no power. His 270 average is decent. It's not going to kill you, but, you know, with a speed guy, you'd be looking for a 300 average so he could at least contribute heavily in that category as well. Overall, I haven't changed my rankings on Andrus at all. He's still a guy I have at about the 120th pick in that range. Just not somebody I'm willing to reach for this year.
Yeah, I agree with you. He's a guy that gets overvalued because he plays at that thin position of shortstop. Not a lot of depth, and people know Elvis Andrus. They know his name. So the fact that he only steals 25 to 30 stolen bases and he is a okay, not good, not great average, and like he doesn't do a ton for you. People are like, oh, it's shortstop. I know what I'm getting for Elvis Andrus. I'll take him earlier than I should. When in reality, you can wait plenty and get the same guy if you want to wait dramatically further in the draft. I think, if anything, this slightly like takes away some value from Andrus because there was rumors that if Profar was healthy, the Rangers would be willing to trade him. And that might change the way he runs on the base paths. He had the ability to steal a ton of bases earlier. And the chance of going to a team where they were more aggressive on the base paths might have got him up to that 35-40 range for steals. But other than that, Andrus doesn't really gain any value. He might even lose some with this Profar news.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I think a lot of times, too, people rely a little too heavily on the position scarcity. And honestly, just taking catcher, for example, if you're going to take a guy early just because catcher's not deep, how much is it really going to help your team overall, you know, just looking at the numbers? Whereas if you wait on catcher this year, you can get a guy in the late rounds. He might miss a game or two per week, but if a guy like Yan Gomes is just being drastically undervalued, can get you 25 home runs, why not just wait and load up on the big bats early in the draft, even if the position itself is loaded?
Yeah, that's a great point because especially in our draft, Yan Gomes went in somewhere around the 16th or 17th round. And if he can get you that 25 homers from the catching position, that's worth a way higher value than that. So obviously waiting up. Let's move on to the earlier goings of draft here. We're going to talk Miguel Cabrera because yesterday he was just cleared to start hitting, throwing, and running, which is good news because he had off-season foot and ankle surgery. But the Tigers are cautiously optimistic about him being ready for opening day. Similar situation to Victor Martinez is coming off of that surgery. And Cabrera is currently being valued as a back end of the first round pick. He's around 6 or 7 in a lot of drafts I've been seeing. Are you surprised that he hasn't lost some of that projected first round pick value?
I'm not terribly surprised. He's been a steady pick for a number of years. People obviously know what they're getting out of him. But I'm advising caution when picking him this year because there's one thing you want with your first-round pick, and that is consistency. Even if he has a bit of a down season, you just need a guy who's going to contribute all year long to your eventual championships. I mean, people last year who took Chris Davis know that that was a terrible pick now, that he was a gamble, and you don't want to gamble with your first-round pick. Now, Miguel Cabrera, I mean, he's obviously one of the best hitters of the generation. There's no denying that. You know, it's laughable that last season he hit 25 home runs with 109 RBIs, and we call it a down year. You know, he's just 32, so he's not too old. But honestly, coming out of this surgery, I'm not sure I'm willing to spend a first-round pick on him when there's younger, healthier options there. You know, in the past, with Albert Pujols and Alex Rodriguez, these guys used to be perennial number one picks for us in fantasy baseball. There just comes a time where you have to start realizing these guys are going to start fading off a little bit. And, you know, correctly start to assess their value. Right now we have him as our number 10 overall pick on our draft guide, and I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up down around 13 or 15 before the season gets underway.
Yeah, I think caution is a good point because with the consistency there, there's question marks surrounding Miguel Cabrera, and the production when he's on the field we can nearly guarantee. If 25 and 110 RBI is the floor, for him, I think owners will be pretty happy with considering him a consistent pick. But the injury question marks that lie with him being drafted that early is enough for me to drop him a little bit in my rankings. I think I'd still take him before other injury guys like Tulowitzki. I'd still take him before low-power guys like Cano and Altuve. But there are guys like the Encarnacion and Jose Bautista that I would be willing to take ahead of him because they have done the significant power numbers multiple times, and I think they are worth a slightly higher pick than Miguel Cabrera with plenty of injuries to go on his draft stock.
Yeah, the only way I'd actually be considering him at the end of the first round is on, like, Yahoo, where he's third base eligible. He played 10 games at third base last year, so on ESPN, he's going to be first base only. I don't think it's worth the risk. But on Yahoo, I can see it. You know, if you can get a third base with 25 home runs and 100 RBIs in the first round, it could be worth the gamble.
Yeah, the position eligibility does change it slightly there. But it's a wait-and-see game right now with Miguel Cabrera. And obviously, if you draft closer to the start of the season, you will have a better idea of what you're getting out of him in the month of April at the very least, and whether or not the Tigers are more comfortable with his health situation. That about wraps it up for the news. Obviously, still no baseball to talk about, like real game action. That's coming around the corner in the very near future. We'll have some more stuff to discuss that's actual on-the-field information. But for now, we're going to move on. We're going to break down the details of the Fantasy Team Advice Writer Draft. It finished up earlier this week. We had representatives from Fantasy Team Advice, Razzball.com, and RotoExperts.com. We had a 12-team league, standard ESPN rules. We're playing head-to-head categories. The only differences we made to the rules are we're adding two DL spots. We have a $100 FAB waiver system, free agent acquisition budget, and we chose not to have divisions, so the best teams overall make the playoffs. So we'll be able to have you follow along with that league as the year goes on. We'll give you updates, things like that. But let's start with the beginning of our draft there, because, KJ, you started the draft off with a bang, trading your first and second overall picks to draft Mike Trout with the number one pick in the draft. You traded with Seth. Looking back, how did that move work out for you?
You know, overall, I didn't really end up with the team that I would have desired, but coming out of the 12th and 13th pick, I wasn't terribly excited about the prospects. So I was much more excited to land, number one, a guy who I'm a big fan of because I'm an Angels fan, and Mike Trout. And number two, as long as he stays healthy, he's going to anchor my team the entire season. I mean, he's a five-category contributor. And with the first overall pick, I was pretty happy to get him there. I didn't pick again until the end of the third round, so it made my draft a little bit more challenging. But overall, I'm still excited for the season to see how my strategy works out.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how it pans out. Now, Seth ended up with Jose Bautista and Anthony Rizzo with your two picks that you traded him. So we're going to be interested to see how Trout measures up to those two guys. That wasn't the only surprise that we had in the early goings of our draft. Obviously, a lot of different opinions going into this one, guys who write in the fantasy baseball realm. So what other picks early on surprised you in those first few rounds?
Well, you know, I've been dealing with the daily fantasy NBA here for a while, so I didn't really have time to sit down and put together our draft guide when we started this draft. And I was really surprised to see Anthony Rendon going with a 16th overall pick. I mean, I knew he had a good year last year, but I didn't realize he was suddenly going to be a top 20 player. Looking back on it now, it wasn't a terrible pick, obviously. He's second base, third base eligible, which is two spots where it's really hard to find production. And in a 12-team writer's draft, it's very unlikely that Rendon was going to last all the way back to J full of hate, which is what the foe stands for. I didn't think that Rendon would last all the way back to him. So what I think he was doing there, he probably would have been a little more comfortable taking him at the end of the second round. But that obviously wasn't his pick there. So he took him when he could get him. And I think that that's an important thing to realize is if there's a guy that you want and you think you're taking him three or four picks early, it doesn't hurt because he's not going to last to come back around to you anyway. So go get your guy. You know, if you believe in him, take that pick.
Yeah, and that's We're having a little issue here with the communication, but people do seem to worry about taking that reach. But if you're confident in a pick like Anthony Rendon, you reach for him a little bit. Take him. It's okay. Because you're reaching compared to rankings that other people are making. So if in the end you feel confident in it, just go for it.
Yeah, I think a lot of times, like especially with the calculations that I use for 5x5, the difference between the 16th and the 20th pick is minimal, you know, for a season of production. So I don't think it's that big of a stretch to take a guy that you have ranked 20th with the 16th pick. It's really not a terrible pick. And I think a lot of times people are slaves to the rankings. You know, we see that on the league all the time. And it's really not worth it. You know, go with your guy, go with your gut. And at the end of the day, you'll be able to say, you know what, I did what I thought was right instead of going based on somebody else's projections or value. Another guy that I was surprised by was Freddie Freeman. Jesse took him with, where was it? So the third to last pick. So that would be, what, 22? 22nd
yep.
overall. You know, first base has been one of the deepest positions in baseball for a long time. That's not changing this year. Freddie Freeman, I think, is a terrific player. I'm actually a really big fan of his. He has a tremendous swing. My only problem with him is the lack of power. You know, he's not a 30-home run guy. And the Braves are rebuilding this year, so I'm not sure that Freeman will even get close to 100 RBIs either. I think it could be a bit of a challenging season for him, and I don't see him as a second-round pick this year. I'd be much more comfortable waiting until the third, maybe even the fourth, given the depth of the position.
Yeah, Freddie Freeman is a guy, I think, that falls victim to the Eric Hosmer syndrome that people have. People think good average, really nice-looking swing. He's a first baseman. He's going to hit 30 home runs. Sometimes there's a first baseman that hits 20 to 25 home runs. It just happens, and I think Freeman is one of those guys. And like you said, the fact the RBI opportunities won't be as drastic out there for him, I think second round was a little bit early for him. Another guy I was surprised with that went right after Freeman, actually, was Bryce Harper to Brian. He's still 22. He's got a whole career ahead of him. But so far in his career, we've seen that he has some growing pains. He's got up to those expectations that people are waiting for. His 19-year-old season was his best. And he hasn't lived up to the expectations that have grown since then. Now, there's a great chance that he puts it all together eventually. But I just wouldn't be willing to roll the dice on a second-round pick betting on that chance because we've seen the highs and we've seen the lows of the Bryce Harper trajectory so far. And I don't think that I'd be willing to take that second-round risk on it.
Yeah, you know, watching Harper, I got a lot of respect for the kid. I mean, he lays it all on the line every time he goes out on the field.
Absolutely.
But just like Ken Griffey, you know, we've seen how it can shorten a career. So hopefully he learns to be a little bit smarter. You don't have to go crashing into the wall on the sideline, you know, to make a catch. I'm hoping that he can actually put together a full season. We'll see how it pans out, but I'm not going to be taking him in the second round, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, it's too high a price tag for me. It would be nice to see him put together a full 160-game campaign and see what he's really got. Without some injuries getting in the way. But let's move on to a little bit more positive reinforcement for some of our writers here. Which players do you think were a steal in the spot that they managed to get drafted in?
I think the clear-cut steal this year was Michael Brantley in the third round. If Rendon is going in the second, and that's probably due to his eligibility at second and third base, I think Brantley should have already been off the board. I mean, last year, Michael Brantley had exactly 200 hits. He finished with a .327 average with 20 home runs, 97 RBIs, and 23 stolen bases. That's legit five-category contribution right there. He's only 28 years old, so he's in the prime of his career. I mean, I just love the target guys. They're 27, 28, 29. They've been in the league a while. They know what they're doing, and they're pros. Right now, we have him ninth overall in this year's draft guide, ahead of Miguel Cabrera. And as long as Brantley stays healthy, I have no problem picking him up at the end of the first round.
Yeah, I think that is the right call. I think Brantley needs a lot more love that he's getting. Because like you said, you laid it out there. He did everything he possibly could for you if you ended up with him on your team last year, and he showed no reason for you to doubt what he was doing. There was no, like, incredibly lucky factors. Maybe his average dips a little bit. Maybe his BABIP goes down. But the guy showed he's got five-category contribution, and he deserves a much higher pick than a second into third round, just around 26 there. In age at his age 22 season in 2009, this is just a little fun fact, MinorLeagueBaseball.com predicted he'd have an all-star season in 2014 and hit above 300. They projected 50 stolen bases because he wasn't a big power guy back then, but it's still a cool sign to see that people knew Brantley would eventually break out like this.
Yeah, you know, it kind of took me by surprise. I haven't followed the Indians very much. I didn't realize that he would be such a solid hitter. I thought his power would develop, but the 327 average really caught me by surprise.
Yeah, the power was something that really was slowly accumulating in his career, and early on he showed more of that high batting average ability than he had lately. Another guy I think that was a really good value was Prince Fielder in the fifth round for Seth. Obviously, he was drafted that late because of the injuries coming off of the Peyton Manning neck injury situation there, but he was the last guy available that I think is a legitimate 30-plus homer, 100 RBI upside with a good average. And I actually have to add for you, Chris Carter, all the way in the 14th round was the last guy that could get you that 30 home run power. And I know people were shying away because he hit 230 or 240 at best, but the power is undeniable. He had 37 home runs last year, and you just can't ignore that when at the end of a draft you're begging for power from some guys.
Yeah, I had Carter sitting there in the 11th, the 12th. I almost took him there, and I was like, you know what? He's a DH only. I just don't want a guy that I have to lock into that utility position on ESPN. So I waited on him, and sure enough, there he is in the 14th. I thought, well, I can't pass on that power anymore. I was lacking in the outfield as I loaded up on early pitching. So I think it was a good value, especially for my team where I needed outfield power.
Yeah, I think that was the right pick at that point. I think people were shying away, like you said, because he is a DH, but the contribution will be there for you for power, where power is not readily available in baseball right now. I also think there were a lot of good values for pitching. A lot of guys in our league waited on pitching, and guys got Gio Gonzalez in the 11th round. Anibal Sanchez went in the 11th round. So there were a lot of really solid pitchers available with near three ERAs and a lot of strikeouts, so it proved that waiting on pitching was a good strategy. Speaking of strategy, which writer do you think had the most interesting or unique strategy that you're looking forward to seeing how it plays out this year?
You know, I really want to see how Seth's team does. Obviously, I traded him the 12th and 13th picks for his number one overall, and I knew that gave him a bit of an advantage with those two early picks, you know, followed by the end of the second, beginning of the third round picks. But what really surprised me was he only took two pitchers in the first 10 rounds, and those two guys were Adam Wainwright and Masahiro Tanaka. And both those guys carry injury risk this year. I don't expect both of them to even complete a full season. They're very dominant pitchers when healthy, but they could easily miss half the year. So it'll be interesting to see if his power-heavy hitting approach pays off. I would expect that, especially initially, he's going to just dominate the league in hitting. We'll see, because apparently he's a self-proclaimed, trade guru, I guess the word would be. He just loves to make trades. He's already sent me a couple trade offers for Steven Strasburg. But I'm not letting go just yet. I want to see how the Strasburg price early picks pay off.
Yeah, spring trading hasn't even started. I'm not surprised, though. He said over and over he loves to trade. I describe him as a trade junkie more than a trade guru. He just seems obsessed with it. But if he wants to throw some offers my way, I'd be open to talking for Harvey or Garrett Richards once they come back healthy and take the league by storm. But I'm intrigued the second overall slot, Brian. His pitching strategy was also really interesting to me. He got that foundation by drafting Greinke, and then he backed it up with three relief pitchers in the 7th, 8th, and 9th round consecutively. He got Jensen, he got Betances, and David Robertson. So he also got four straight pitchers in rounds 13 through 16. So he had all nine of his starting pitchers by round 16 and a ton of saves to go with that. So I think it was interesting to see how he really wrapped up that solid pitching core, and he kept on adding to it as the draft went along. He ended up with some hitters that I'm not enormous fans of, like I said, Bryce Harper, Kyle Seager, Mookie Betts. But on paper, he ended up with a pretty well-rounded team, despite the fact that he did end up early on. So I'm really interested to see how his closer-heavy strategy pans out and the fact that he went so strong on pitching in the early teens.
Yeah, that Mookie Betts pick might not pay off because they're now saying Shane Victorino is their starting right fielder in Boston. So we're going to have to keep an eye on that situation.
Mookie went in the sixth round of our draft, which I thought was pretty high. There was a ton of hype coming around him last year. There was even more in spring training. But if he doesn't get that starting job, it makes way more sense for the Red Sox to use his minor league option and get him daily reps. So it's going to be interesting to see how that pans out. Someone else also ended up drafting Ruzny Castillo early. I think it was Jesse in the 11th. So those two guys might end up not getting as much value as we thought if they don't get those starting spots. Let's talk good teams here. Which writer do you think ended up with the best team overall after looking back at the draft?
Yeah, this is a tough one for me because just looking over all of them, I can see potential holes and weaknesses. A lot of guys really reached for injury risk picks. And obviously, whoever's team stays the healthiest will have the best chance to compete. Everybody in this league is a knowledgeable fantasy baseball player. But overall, I honestly think that your team ended up the best. The only pick I'm not in love with was Albert Pujols. That's just because of the injury concerns and probably because I'm an Angels fan. It just seems like a terrible contract. So I have a bit of a bias there. But I love the fact that you got Cole Calhoun and Victor Martinez later in the 7th and 8th rounds. I think those were great picks, especially since it looks like Martinez will be coming back healthy. And then you managed to grab Jock Peterson, and I think he's going to be a tremendous player. Who knows if he can put it all together in his first full season, if they even give him a full season of at-bats. But then you got Doug Fister in the 14th, and he's a guy that's always overlooked. But he's a very solid pitcher. You know he's going to just go out there and eat up innings for you. Overall, I think you probably had the best draft.
I appreciate that. And I'm fully aware that my team had some volatility involved in it because I do have Matt Harvey, Victor Martinez, and Garrett Richards all on my team. So there's a lot of, are they going to come back healthy? Or are they going to come back strong? But if that does happen, I'm going to feel pretty happy about what I ended up with. Other than me, I think Sky's roster was really interesting to me. It may come off a bit too, once again, risk-reward for people. But I think what he did with his pitching, loading up on young guys that could end up being aces for him, was an awesome strategy. He got Carlos Carrasco, Zach Wheeler, Marcus Stroman, and Tyson Ross, who are all young arms with incredible talent. And I wouldn't be shocked if all of them ended up in the top 20, 25 pitchers at the end of the year. So he could end up with huge value for all of those younger pitchers there. On the other side, on your own team, are there any picks that you regret making or any decisions you wish you had gone back and changed?
Yeah, you know, I think I treated this draft a little too casually. I treated it more like a mock draft, even though we are actually putting money into it. Overall, this season, I'm definitely going to be waiting on pitching and catching. So I took Price and Strasburg in the 3rd and the 4th. I took Lucroy in the 6th, and we all know how that's going to pan out now. This season, I'm probably going to take the Seth approach and load up early on hitting and then grab pitchers late and catchers. I'll probably just take a catcher in the 21st or 22nd round.
Yeah, and I think I had a similar issue at the beginning of the draft. I really regretted not getting a power guy because I got a bunch of guys and get me 20, 25 homers, but I don't have a guy that I think is going to comfortably win me home runs or RBIs in a given week. I have some like production across the board, but I think power is coming a premium this year, and I didn't get a legitimate 30, 35 home run guy, and I kind of regret that. But that is going to do it for us here on today's Fantasy Team Advice Baseball Podcast. Thank you all very much for listening. Thank you, KJ, for coming on. We've got a lot of exciting stuff on the website going on. There's plenty of daily fantasy basketball and hockey, thanks to our slew of writers over there. We're also introducing a Twitch.tv stream. Starting now for daily basketball advice, we'll be added to our baseball coverage starting on opening day every day of the week for an hour before the opening pitch or opening tip in basketball. So you've got a lot of that to look forward to. We also have our baseball draft kit on sale on fantasyteamadvice.com, as KJ alluded to. So while you wait for next Saturday's podcast, you can enjoy all kinds of fantasy baseball, fantasy basketball, hockey, even golf information, thanks to fantasyteamadvice.com. So for KJ, I'm Joe DiRienzo, and thank you all very much for listening.